Here's something most investors miss. It's not recklessness that costs people money. It's being late. Big shifts start quietly in policy meetings and regulatory rooms, long before they hit the headlines. Right now, the AI buildout is driving massive spending in energy, data, and infrastructure. There is a way to potentially benefit from that surge without betting on a single tech stock. To get the full breakdown, visit planwithoxford.com. Again, that's planwithoxford.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We have a lot to talk about today, everybody. Hello. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. I am your host, Todd Starnes. Your voice of truth and hope across the fruited plain. Where do we begin? I've been debating this really for the past couple of hours, but I want to start in with something that happened yesterday. Did not get a lot of attention in the legacy news and the drive-by media, but I believe it's really important to the health and well-being of the country. So a Congresswoman Nancy Mace, who you may or may not like, I know that she rubs a lot of Republicans the wrong way, a lot of conservatives the wrong way, and I get that. But on this one issue, I believe that Congresswoman Mace has really hit a home run. So there was an effort afoot by the Congresswoman to release these files up on Capitol Hill. Now, many of you may not be aware of this, that your tax dollars are being used by members of Congress to create a super secret slush fund. And this slush fund, the slush fund is not to go buy snacks for the staff. That's not what this is all about. This is to pay off women and young men to be silent. These are victims of sexual abuse, and they've filed allegations, filed reports, and to keep all of these people quiet, well, they use this slush fund that was created by and funded by your tax dollars. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. So all of this is coming to light because of Texas Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who is now in a runoff for his congressional seat. So this guy is married. I think he's got six kids. And he was shacking up with one of his female staffers. And it got so bad, the staffer eventually committed suicide. She literally set herself on fire. Now, we don't know officially why she set herself on fire. This was a huge scandal in Texas. Gonzalez says he had nothing to do with the woman's death. But again, he was cheating on his wife with a female staffer, and he did not resign. And I find it telling that the Republican Party told him, do not resign. So the Republican Party is just turning a blind eye to this, this scandal. It's a terrible story. So anyway, now the House Ethics Committee has opened up an investigation to examine whether or not he violated the House's code of conduct, which, by the way, prohibits sexual relationships with staff. So if you're a member of Congress, you can't do the boot, scoot, and boogie with one of your secretaries. We will see how all of this plays out, but it's very possible that Gonzalez could return to Congress. I mean, if the people of his district say, yeah, we don't mind having a philanderer, we don't mind having a guy who takes advantage of women. You know, we don't mind having an adulterer, a fornicator, representing us in Congress. And maybe that's what the good people down there in his congressional district want. So anyway, Nancy Mace this week forced action on a resolution. And this resolution would have compelled the ethics panel to release every single report and all the material it has on allegations of sexual misconduct and harassment among people up on Capitol Hill. And I think this is a brilliant idea. But the Republicans and the Democrats, they freaked out and they shot this thing down. I mean, it was ugly, ugly. And so as it now stands, that information will not be released to the public. Now, we're going to be talking to a congressman a little bit later on today who actually voted to keep all of this quiet. Congressman John Rose out of Tennessee. And I'm just going to ask him point blank, why? Why is it the public has been denied the right to see this information? I mean, we're having to pay for it. We're having to foot the bill for it. So why should we not know who the sex fiends and the perverts are on Capitol Hill? And I thought it was interesting because this had overwhelming bipartisan support. The Democrats and Republicans finally agreed on something. Only a handful, I think less than 70 members of Congress actually said, yeah, we've got to shine some light on this. And by the way, Congressman Tim Burchett, one of those people. Now, here's what gets me. All of the people that voted to protect their own backsides are the same people out there saying, oh, we've got to disclose everything about Jeffrey Epstein. Now, I'm a pretty common sense guy. I don't take talking points from the Republicans, the Democrats, nobody. This is just my opinion here. But it seems to me, if you've got these files, whether they be on members of Congress or Jeffrey Epstein, I just say release everything. We're all grown adults. We can all handle the truth. And let's find out exactly what's been going on among the halls of the powerful in Congress and also the rich and famous in America who clearly live to a different standard and are held to a different standard than the average law-abiding American citizen. So I'm curious, do you believe that we ought to release this information? Should we know? And by the way, do you have a right to know if the person you elected to Congress is chasing around little girls and boys up on Capitol Hill? I mean, years ago, there was a huge gay scandal involving the male pages in the Senate. There's some freaky deaky stuff going on. I'm telling you, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Now, the other big news here, President Trump is about to step in to this Texas Senate race. And I want to explain what's going on here. There's a lot of very anxious people right now within the Republican world. And they're concerned that we could lose this Senate seat in Texas. They're very concerned about James Tallarico. I would almost suggest to you, this guy is demonic. James Tallarico is a blasphemer. This guy is twisting scripture, and he's very brilliant at it, which is why he is a very dangerous person. He has a way of twisting scripture to try and convince people that, for example, God is non-binary, or that that Jesus is pro-abortion. I mean, these are the kinds of things this guy is doing, and he's cloaking himself in his theology, which is an antichrist theology. Very dangerous guy here. And I say he's very dangerous because we do not have a very well-educated voting population. Under the age of, I would say, 40, it's sort of hit or miss. So anyway, people are very concerned about what's happening. As a matter of fact, Karl Rove, Mr. Whiteboard, over on Fox News, suggested that he could actually win. He could pull off a wild upset in Texas. So the establishment guy is John Cornyn. John Cornyn has always hated Donald Trump. He's always opposed Donald Trump. I mean, it's really that simple. And Ken Paxton has been the one guy who has stood alongside Donald Trump through thick and thin, through it all. So Trump is coming in, and he put out a statement late last night saying, hey, look, here's the deal. I'm going to be endorsing somebody here. and whoever doesn't get my endorsement has to drop out. My question to you, who do you think Trump ought to endorse? Now, the odds on, and again, hear me, I'm sharing this as the lay of the land in Texas here, but the odds on favorite would be John Cornyn because he's the incumbent. However, when you look at the overall vote totals, Cornyn only got, what, 41.9%, 42% of the vote. This guy's been in office for 20-something years. That tells me that the Republicans in Texas are ready for somebody different. But the argument from the establishment wing, and I would say this is coming from the Bushes and the Roves, is that Kim Paxton cannot win a statewide race. I don't see that based on the numbers. As a matter of fact, the only thing that would prevent a Republican from winning is if Republicans don't show up to vote. And by the way, you know who does that? Both sides. All of you MAGA people, you get butt hurt when your candidate doesn't win, so you stay home. And all you establishment people, you get butt hurt when your candidate. So it's a big problem. Democrats, they'll go and vote. Doesn't matter who it is. They'll fight like cats and dogs, but at the end of the day, they'll at least go and vote. So we've got our own set of issues, and we'll deal with that story later. But I'm just curious here, who do you people support, and who should President Trump endorse in this race? Now, I have a theory, and hear me out on this. Things are not going well in the Justice Department right now. I mean, really bad. As a matter of fact, they quietly, this is according to CBS, NBC, New York Times, they have quietly shelved the Biden auto pen investigation. Now, let me just say, here we are. We're, 1 year and 3 months into President Trump's term in office. No one has been held accountable for anything, and no one will. Trump is really upset. He's upset at Pam Bondi. He's also upset at Kristi Noem, who, by the way, testified on Capitol Hill yesterday, and she was asked a question about her relationship with Corey Lewandowski. Sorry, I'm on. It's not. I know it feels like a tangent, but it's really not a tangent. All right, so just bear with me for a moment here. So she was asked about Corey Lewandowski, and the story is that Kristi Noem, the Secretary of Homeland Security, has been having biblical relations of an unsavory kind with Mr. Lewandowski. And it's kind of weird. He shows up wherever she is, wherever she goes, he's by her side. And it's just weird. So yesterday on Capitol Hill, she was actually asked about that. Democrats said, are you cheating on your husband with Corey Lewandowski? She refused to answer that question. And quite frankly, that question should have come from a Republican, because that needs to be resolved. And she was asked multiple times, and she refused to say yes or no. Seems to me, if you're not cheating on your spouse, that would be a hell no. And who do you think you are, and who told you that? Because I'm going to hunt him down, and I'm going to beat the ever-loving crap out of him. That's the correct response, Kristi Noem. Hair comes up. Hoops come off. We're going to have a throwdown. Now, you Southern ladies, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If somebody accuses you of something like that, somebody's getting a punch to the nose. I'm just saying. So anyway, all of that to say, how does this tie into Texas? Well, if Noem or Bondi get whacked, you could see President Trump offering Kim Paxton the AG job. There's also rumblings that we could have an opening, a vacancy on the Supreme Court. You could have Ted Cruz being named to the Supreme Court, and Trump, or at that point, the governor of Texas could step in and appoint Ken Paxton to Ted Cruz's open Senate seat. So there are different puzzle pieces moving around here. But I'm telling you, MAGA is going to be enraged if Trump does not pick Ken Paxton. All right, we're going to go right to the phones. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. As Operation Epic Fury intensifies, the world braces for what comes next, and people of faith pray for freedom and for God's people to be protected. This is Todd Stearns, and in the Holy Land at this moment, red alert sirens fill the air, sirens that give you 15 seconds to reach the nearest bomb shelter. The situation is serious, the threat real. In times like this, freedom and faith are not just abstract ideas. They are what we depend on. And the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews is on the ground preparing large-scale distributions of life-saving food, first aid, and emergency essentials for security personnel, helping ensure hospitals, ERs, and shelters are stocked with critical medical supplies. This aid is focused on Israel's most vulnerable, the sick, the elderly, children, and families in need. But the fellowship needs your most generous gift today to make this possible. Now is your time to stand. Rush your gift order by calling 888-488-IFCJ. That's 888-488-IFCJ or visit ifcj.org. All right. Welcome back, everybody. It is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. By the way, I want to give a shout out to our friends at KYKN in Salem, Oregon. We understand that our show, the Todd Stearns Show, the number one show in the city, and we are honored by that news. So thank you so much for listening to us, no matter where you are, including in Houston. Let's go to the phone. Steve, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Hi, Steve. What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. I enjoy your show. And, you know, ever since Donald Trump got elected, I've been wondering, you know, he campaigned on bringing Hillary to justice. He said she would be in jail. And with all these Epstein releases, it seems like they redacted all the people they want to protect. And they just put the unredacted ones, it seems, that they're trying to throw under the bus. And my main thing is I'm wondering, I haven't heard anything about the Podesta emails since Donald Trump got elected. And that was a big thing. You know, Hillary was smashing hard drives with a hammer trying to cover up. And people that have come out and said what was in those emails make the Epstein files look like kids' play.
Well, the reality, Steve, we're a year and 3 months into the administration, and Russia. Look at the Hunter Biden laptop story. You've got the Biden, the whole Biden family crime syndicate. You've got the auto pen scandal. Nobody's being held accountable for anything.
Right. I mean, to me, it seems like every time anything comes up, too, something else comes up to take the people's attention off of what's really going on.
Well, and that may be it, Steve. I think a door is open, by the way. I hear the dinging in the background. Here's the deal. I do think that there was massive wrongdoing, and I also believe that the deep state is real, and it is so powerful that even Donald Trump will not be able to bring justice where justice is due. I mean, that's the cold, hard reality. Steve, I got to run. Thank you for that call. Let's go to Mike in Clear Lake City, Texas. Hi, Mike. What's on your mind? Hello, Mike.
Well, you kind of got me fired. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, go for it.
You got me fired up about the Texas race. You're right. Tallarico is definitely demon-possessed. But if he runs against Cornyn, he wins. Cornyn won't beat him. Because people in Texas are not going to vote for Cornyn any longer. The only way we get a Republican in is if it's Paxton. And if President Trump endorses John Cornyn, and Paxton doesn't run, if he steps aside like Trump wants him to, the turnout won't be there for Cornyn. Cornyn spent $70 million, and he barely got in. Paxton only spent $4 million. So what does that tell you? The people in Texas have had it with rhinos and voting for the lesser of two evils. We got rid of Dan Crenshaw, no good globalist rhino dirtbag. We'll do the same with Cornyn. Because I know when I go to vote, if it's Cornyn and Tallarico, I'm just not going to vote in that race.
Wow. So I'm curious here, Mike, and I've got to run to break here, but I am curious how many other people in Texas agree with your perspective there. I will say this. There have been some reporting out. Wesley Hunt has yet to throw in behind anybody. The reporting is that Susie Wiles from the White House called Hunt and told him, don't endorse anybody yet. White House now denying those reports. So we'll have more to say about it coming up after the break. Stick around, everybody.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade. It wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888. And over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%. While inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, the numbers, 29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
All right, all you Tennessee people, I have a question for you. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. So there is a state representative by the name of Monty Fritz. He's been on this program a time or two. The guy's running for governor. He wants to be the next governor of the volunteer state, and he's a Republican, very conservative guy, very devoutly a religious man, a Christian man. And he has introduced a bill, legislation, that would call for every college campus, university campus that's run by Tennessee, paid for by Tennessee tax dollars, that all of these colleges and universities would be required to erect memorials for Charlie Kirk. The memorial. And by the way, this would apply to 47 schools that are a part of the University of Tennessee system and the Tennessee Board of Regents system. Now, the question is, by the way, it's going to cost taxpayers more than $18 million to build these memorials and nearly $250,000 a year just to maintain them. And I'm wondering about a couple of things. First of all, is that the best use of our tax money? I mean, everybody, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people love Charlie Kirk, but do we need to be mandating that memorials be erected to honor Charlie Kirk at taxpayer expense? And if we're going to honor Charlie Kirk, then what happens if somebody wants to, I don't know, erect a memorial for Rush Limbaugh or Paul Harvey? What about that? Or, God forbid, the Democrats get in charge again. What happens when the Democrats want to start erecting memorials for their people? I mean, I'm trying to think who would be Al Sharpton. I mean, really? Is that the best use of our money? And I'm just sort of surprised that this is actually coming from a Republican. We're supposed to be fiscal conservatives. And if people want to build a memorial for Charlie Kirk, I say that's great. But they should be raising their own money, and they should be using private funds and not taxpayer dollars. The courtyard would include four plaques that display the Bill of Rights, the Tennessee Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Ten Commandments. Kirk's name and date of his death would appear on the plaques. The installations would be called the Charlie Kirk Memorial Courtyard for Civil Debate, and the courtyards would be required to be at least 1,600 square feet. So anyway, I'm just curious if you folks think this is a wise thing to do, that the Republicans should be mandating that we build these memorials for Charlie Kirk at taxpayer expense. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Let's go to the phones, by the way. Todd in North Carolina wants to weigh in on what's happening up in Congress with the SAVE Act. Hey, Todd, what's going on?
Hey, Todd, 1967 I was born, and I can tell you this. Rush Limbaugh right now would be pushing the SAVE Act. And let Texas take care of Texas. Trump can endorse. That's great. That's wonderful. Where are the supporters in North Carolina? Where's Ted Budd at trying to get, you know, our senator down here elected? I think we need to concentrate on that, and we need to get the SAVE Act passed, because if we do that, Todd, I'm telling you, Rush Limbaugh would be hammering it right now. Get it done. It'll take care of a lot of the aggravation and frustrations as conservatives, Republicans that we have right now. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, look, yeah, I think we ought to do it, but they're not going to do it. And there's another, I'm going to throw this wrench into it. Now we're being told that John Cornyn, or at least John Thune, the majority leader, may be holding all of this up and using the Texas Senate race as the threat. That if you do not, that Mr. President, you know, if you do not endorse John Cornyn, we're not going to pass the SAVE Act. So they're now using that as leverage in who President Trump may endorse in that Senate race.
Call them, put pressure on them. The radio show you got, man, you hit millions of people, Todd. We need to hammer that home. North Carolina, we ain't got a radio station here, man. I got to go up on a mountain to get your station. And that's what's sad. You know, the people here in North Carolina, man, they need to step up and put pressure on the Senate leadership. I mean, we just need to have more voices out there. I'll guarantee you that if Rush was here today, that's the most important thing we could do right now. Pass that SAVE Act.
Well, we've been sounding the alarm noon to three for the past 2 months now. And I am telling you, Todd, that somebody with very deep pockets, somebody with incredibly deep pockets, is out there stopping this from becoming a reality. I mean, that's the issue here. And whoever it is even more powerful than the President of the United States. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. Todd, I got to run. Thank you for that. 901-260-5926 is our number. That's 901-260-5926. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Here's something most people miss. Investors don't usually lose money because they're reckless. They lose money because they hear about opportunities after the biggest players have already positioned themselves. Major shifts often start quietly in policy meetings, regulatory changes, and capital planning long before they make headlines. Right now, AI isn't just a technology story. It's an energy story, a data story, an infrastructure story. And when government and major corporations move in the same direction, the biggest beneficiaries are often the financing and infrastructure channels behind the scenes. There's one opportunity built around that idea, designed to benefit from the AI build-out without trying to guess which company becomes the next superstar. To get the full breakdown, visit planwithoxford.com. Again, that's planwithoxford.com.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Great to have you with us. We are always honored to have Scott Turner, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, joining us. Mr. Secretary, thank you for waiting around after the break. And I right out of the get-go, I've got to get your reaction to these crazy headlines. You know, every time you do something good, the legacy media is all over you. And this is what was the headline from you from MS Now. Trump's HUD secretary touts rule change that could make thousands of people homeless.
Yes, sir. Well, Todd, it's always great to be with you. And, you know, what I've learned in this role and prior to this is that if you're doing something good, you know, there's bound to be negative headlines and naysayers. And when people say that we want to make people homeless, that is exactly the opposite of what we're doing at HUD. We're actually putting the American dream back in reach for the American people. Under President Trump's leadership, you know, owning a home is the American dream. And so we want to serve the people that we've been called to serve at HUD. And so I think the most recent proposed rule that you're speaking of is our work requirements and time limit, you know, whereby HUD is giving PHAs and property owners around the country the ability to require up to 40 hours a week and or two or more years of time limits for those living inside of HUD-funded housing. And Todd, as you know, man, work restores dignity and work restores family formation. And I've traveled all around our country and seen people, able-bodied people, matter of fact. This is for those that are non-elderly and non-disabled. If you're an able-bodied, able-minded person, then and you're receiving HUD funds for housing, you should work. And the results of this is life expectancy, well-being are greater. We save taxpayer dollars. Todd, only one out of four eligible families right now in our country are we able to serve. So this will allow us to serve the people that actually need to be served. It restores the dignity, as I said before. And so for all the naysayers and the negativity, HUD under President Trump, we're doing great things for America.
Well, and I think the average American, and especially the hardworking taxpayers, greatly appreciate what you're trying to do here, because we have seen, and especially public housing, and by the way, you mentioned the term PHA. Folks, that's public housing authorities. We have seen families for generations living in public housing at the cost of taxpayers. And Mr. Secretary, the point you're trying to make here is we want those people to get out of public housing and, you know, perhaps buy their own home and start claiming that American dream.
That's exactly right. You know, the goal here in our heart is to break the generational cycle of poverty, you know, and to help people. You know, public housing or any government subsidy, if you will, is not meant to be a hammock, but a trampoline. It's not meant to be a lifetime handout, but really a short-term hand up, you know, and that's very frankly putting it. We want to help people in a time of need, but we don't want to create a lifestyle where people live from generation to generation on public assistance. And Todd, in 2024, only 50% of non-elderly and non-disabled households. So think about this, 50% of the people that are non-elderly, non-disabled, that live in public housing, HUD-funded housing, did not earn one single dollar in 2024. So that means 50% of the people that are able to work did not earn one single dollar. And 90% of the people that receive Section 8 housing or Section 8 funding, if you will, 90%, Todd, stay on these subsidies for more than 5 years. And 50% will stay more than 15 years. So to answer your question and really to drive this point home, America is not a welfare state. We want people that are able to work. Not just because, but because that life expectancy, well-being, family formation, dignity are restored. And so that's our aim here.
I think it's fascinating when you look at what's happening, the fraud, the level of fraud that's being uncovered in places like, for example, Minneapolis and Minnesota in general, and, of course, those hearings yesterday up on Capitol Hill. I mean, when you're telling me that nearly 50% of the people that are living in public housing are able-bodied, they're younger people, they're not elderly, and they're not going out there and getting jobs, that tells me the level of grift may be so great. By the time you guys get all this sorted out, we're not going to have to raise taxes. As a matter of fact, we might be able to lower taxes when all the grift is finally exposed.
That's exactly right. And, you know, a big deal when we came in under President Trump was to root out all the waste, fraud, and abuse. And at HUD, you know, from day one, that's what we've been doing. And just to kind of give you an example, when this proposed rule becomes effective, we estimate that the average income of those that are living in HUD-funded housing, household income will gain $16,000 after they pay their rent. So $16,000 per household and about $54 to $215 million will transfer from current tenants to those that are unassisted households or savings back to the taxpayers. So, yeah, we don't need to raise taxes. We don't need to put an extra burden on the American people. We just need to put these and other type of rules in place to where people can start earning money, earning income, get off of government subsidies, be self-sufficient, and make room for those that actually need the help so they, too, can get in the same cycle, the same trajectory to become self-sufficient.
Mr. Secretary, we've got a lot of younger Americans that listen to this program. Many of them are right out of college or they've jumped right into the workforce. And, you know, a big concern among them has been the affordability issue, especially when wanting to go out and buy their first home. And I know this has been a big concern of yours as well. How are things going in that effort to make housing more affordable and making the market accessible?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, it is a valid concern of those that are looking to buy a home. But I will tell you, you know, I meet with the president, you know, humbly saying I get to meet with him about this issue and others. But he is, this is top of mind for the president, myself, and other leaders in this administration. Todd, I'll take a step back. During the Biden administration, tens of millions of illegals were led across our borders unchecked, unvetted, and that put a real strain on our housing supply, and it made housing costs to go up. Even the rental demand in some states around our country, 100% of the increase of the rental demand in certain places like New York and California and others was because of illegal immigration. So at HUD, as we have been taking inventory, we have made it so now, partnering with DHS, that anybody that is living in HUD-funded housing has to be an American citizen or an eligible resident of America. Because HUD funds, which are taxpayer dollars, should go to those that are American citizens or eligible and those people only. We also stop FHA-backed mortgages going to illegals. Only FHA-backed mortgages are for the American people and American people only. And I say this as an encouragement to your listeners, that steps are being taken every single day to bring housing supply online, more housing supply, and to bring affordability up. Right now, mortgage affordability is at a four-year high. Mortgage rates have dropped below 6%. Rents have come down over the last 5 or 6 months. And so the amount of money that people have to spend every single month is coming down under President Trump. Supply is going up. So young people and older people alike should be encouraged that we are doing everything we can to bring on housing supply, to bring the cost down. At HUD last year, we helped 1 million people become home buyers. 1 million, Todd, in 1 year, and 500,000 were first-time home buyers, and we're just now getting started.
That is just incredibly tremendous. I do want to circle back, though, to something you brought up about the illegals. There was something that was called the mixed status household loophole, and you guys have closed that loophole now. What is that? What will that do?
Yes, sir. So that's our new proposed rule, our qualified citizens rule. And you said it, sir. We closed this loophole, the mixed status loophole. During the Biden administration, there were those who would come into HUD-funded housing, and they would make a declaration, if you will, that they were a U.S. citizen and yet not give proof and were allowed to live in HUD-funded housing. That's the first problem. The second problem is there would be those who would also come to live in that same household that marked the section on their application that says, do not contend, quote unquote, my immigration status. And so there was no accountability for those who said they were American citizens and no accountability for those who said they do not contend. So this, in turn, created mixed status household. Really, they were roommates. And so now we have, with our new proposal, closed that loophole, allowing you have to show proof that you are an American citizen or an eligible resident of the United States in order to receive HUD-funded housing. So that loophole has been closed, and we have prioritized only American people. And again, this will make room for those who actually need the help to live in HUD-funded housing that are American citizens and eligible residents of our country. And this is going to literally transfer hundreds of millions of dollars to fully eligible American households, whereby making these places available for our American people.
Well, this is all just terrific news. Mr. Secretary, I know we're coming up on a hard break for this program, but we just appreciate the great work you're doing protecting the hardworking tax money of the American people and really helping and encouraging people to get out there and live the American dream. That's what it's all about. Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming on the show again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Todd.
All right. There you go, folks. Scott Turner, who is Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Wow. That ought to make you feel good that clearly the administration is focusing on the affordability issue. We've been hearing that just from every young caller, every person that's been reaching out to us. We've been hearing this has been a big issue. But beyond that, now telling people, hey, you're going to live in public housing. yeah, you're going to go get a job, and you're going to have to show proof that you're out there trying to find a job. I love that idea. And again, shutting down those loopholes, because as the secretary said, you had the illegals. They were literally gaming the system. So well done, Secretary Turner, and we always appreciate him hopping on the program to give us an update of what they're up to. We've got to take a quick break here, folks. In the break, I want to encourage you to head over to Amazon and pre-order a copy of my brand-new book. It'll be out this spring. It's called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And this is going to be one of those books that you're going to want to read. If you've got a teenager, a kid in college, they're going to want to read this book. Find out how Trump saved America and what we need to do to save America in the midterm elections. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back. This is the Todd Stern Show.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
Texas, that's right. I love this American ride.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Dylan, I've heard all this noise during the commercial break in our palatial studios, the broadcast bunker. And the lovely Miss Shelby went out and bought one of those, I don't know, what do you call them, the portable, dirt dusters?
It's like a handheld vacuum.
A handheld vacuum. Like, what is going on? And we've had this massive infestation of, they're not ladybugs, but they look like ladybugs.
Yeah, they're like mutant ladybugs.
They're evil bugs.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place.
They are.
And I don't know why maybe they're conservative. They like conservative talk radio. I don't know, but they are literally in the thousands. And so she's using the dirt duster thing, the little handheld vacuum, the
yeah.
dirt devil is what they
dirt
call
devil.
It.
Thank yeah, you, yeah, yeah.
The dirt devil to destroy the ladybugs.
Yes,
she but is, they're not yeah. ladybugs.
Well, she's getting them. That's the least that we can say here. She's turning that thing on, and it's lasting a long time.
I will buy whoever can tell me how to stop the infestation. I will buy you a Chick-fil-A dinner.
Why is there so many that exist on this earth?
For the love of the Lord, make
Golly.
It stop. All that to say, if you hear any vacuuming in the background, it's another ladybug going to meet its maker. All right. I want to go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker lot. You know, I just thought about this. Our next guest might be able to give us some guidance here. I mean, he is a farmer. Our good friend, Congressman John Rose from the great state of Tennessee. Congressman, first, great to have you on the show today.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show, Todd.
Congressman, can you help us out? We got a ladybug infestation, and you're the only farmer person I know. It's...
Yeah, those things are—they're really a plague. You know, we get them, and usually what happens if it's warmed up a little, and then you have kind of a colder snap, they start trying to come inside to get out of the cold air, I guess. And they're a real pain, and they stink too. If you're dealing with the ones that I think you are, they actually, when you like vacuum them up, or if you smash one, heaven forbid, they actually smell pretty bad.
Well, I didn't realize that, but thank you for the warning. So we'll get some Febreze. You know, here's my concern. I don't want to have like a Mike Pence situation when I'm hosting Newsmax and one of those things land like on my forehead. That's my big concern. Well, Congressman,
that is likely to happen. You know, they do move around some. So,
well, no doubt about it. All right. Well, we'll just keep using the dirt devil. Congressman, we've got a lot to talk about. And I know that you have been very passionate about the SAVE Act, the SAVE America Act, and making sure that the Senate does what you guys have already done. What is the holdup here? This has to be a great source of frustration for all of you guys on the House side.
Well, absolutely. You know, we passed it last year, now probably 425 days ago or so, and then we passed it a couple of weeks back a slightly better version. And, you know, we think the Senate should take it up. And I think the president agrees with us. And I think Americans overwhelmingly agree with us that, you know, we need to secure our elections. It's the most important single thing I think we could do. And there are a lot of important things we need to do. But if the American people can't trust that their vote is sacrosanct, then I think we are headed down the wrong path. And I think while Republicans have the opportunity to get this done, we need to get it done. And frankly, I just don't buy the excuses that we hear coming from the Senate side, from the majority leader Thune, that, you know, this is going to take too long. I think that this is so fundamental to everything else that they need to take the time they need to take and put the pressure on the Democrat members on this, over on the Senate side, because we know that, you know, over 80% of Americans agree about this. Over 70% of Democrats agree about this. And it doesn't matter what demographic group you look at, there is consensus on this issue. And we know those, that that level of consensus is rare in American politics these days. And so we just need to get this done. And I think the Senate needs to determine that it's worth doing and then put the, you know, put the time and energy into it and make the decisions to get it done.
For me, it's a bit bewildering because it is very clear where the president of the United States stands on this issue. And I know the president putting out a statement on Truth Social this morning saying the Republicans must do with passion and at the expense of everything else, the Save America Act, not the watered down version. This is a country defining fight for the soul of our nation. I mean, the president's not mincing words here. And yet the majority leader, the audacity of the majority leader to basically stand up to the leader of the party, a congressman.
I think that's right. I mean, I think they don't get it. And, of course, we've seen the Senate being less than, you know, stellar in terms of their productivity. And this issue just needs to be given the priority that it deserves. And I think ultimately this can be a real separating issue for this whole election cycle with the American people, and we and the Senate needs to frame it. And, you know, if for some reason they try but they fail, at least they will have tried. And I think it's unacceptable that they're just kind of waving this off.
We have Congressman John Rose with us from Tennessee, who is giving up his seat in Congress. He is running to be the next governor. There is a three-person primary, predominantly three-person primary. Many other people are running, including, by the way, a congressman, a former NASA astronaut, Butch Wilmore, who got stuck up in space. That's his claim to fame. But he himself is also a farmer, and he's thrown his hat into the ring.
Well, I think he has pulled a petition, and, you know, obviously the qualifying date's coming up here next week, but, you know, we'll see who actually gets in. You know, it's a little bit late, frankly, in my estimation, that, you know, we've been traveling the state for more than a year talking to Tennesseans, and so I think Tennesseans want to get to know their leaders before they make choices like this. And so, you know, wish everyone well that wants to, you know, get into this race. But I think it's a little bit late. And as you know, it's a pretty heavy lift to stand up and run a statewide campaign. And I think, you know, I think some of these folks that are getting in late, maybe haven't thought through all the details of that, will find that it's hard to get the opportunity really to make your case if you don't have the time and the resources to get that done.
Yeah, from Bartlett to Bristol is a lot of mileage there. The only thing that makes it enjoyable is you've got a couple of buckies between here and there, Congressman. But to your point, there's a lot of ground to cover. And I heard you were in Memphis, I believe, last weekend for the Lincoln Dinner, and you gave a great speech. Senator Marsha Blackburn gave a great speech. And, you know, just full disclosure, I endorsed her early on. I think that's always important to say. But I'm just going to ask you this, Congressman. Why do you think she would make a lousy governor?
She doesn't have the right experience. I think it's just really that simple. I think also, though, that it's, you know, this place, Washington, is I think it's a bit toxic, and I think it's degrading, and in terms of keeping yourself focused. That's why I think that George Washington set the example, and so many have followed, of you come and serve for a season and you come home. You know, there is there's a corrosive nature to the atmosphere in Washington, and I think that's why you see Senator Blackburn, frankly, out of touch at this point with her voters back in Tennessee in terms of so many issues like, you know, whether she should use her power to get special treatment, you know, for herself, or whether it's to, you know, pad her pocket with a payday provision that puts money in her pocket personally. I think you, if you're here too long, you kind of forget who it is you serve. And so I think it's really those two things. The job of being governor is the job of leader of our state. It's a CEO job. It's very different from the job that I'm doing right now as a member of Congress and that she's done for the last 30 years, most of her adult life. And I think Tennesseans get that. That's why they continually and repeatedly elected people with that CEO experience. I have that. And the opponents, all of these opponents that that we might make mention of, from both parties and independents alike, they all lack that experience. And so I bring that to the table. I won't have to get on the job training. I did that in my own business, building businesses, creating jobs, signing the front side of a paycheck, figuring out and learning how to lead large organizations. And that's the job of being governor. And I think that's really the distinguishing characteristic here.
Was there something specific, though? I mean, you've made some accusations against Blackburn. Was there one single thing that you said, man, that just rubs me the wrong way?
Well, I think any time you use your power as an elected official to get preferential treatment to benefit you personally, that's wrong.
Did she do that?
Wrong. And I think Tennesseans get that.
Did she do that?
Well, so in the recent ice storm, it's been reported that she and her team asked for preferential treatment in terms of restoring her electric power at her personal residence. And they got that. So it's, you know, and why did they get that? They got that because I think the leaders of Nashville Electric Service understood who she was and what she was asking for, and they acceded to her demand and gave and put her ahead of every other average American, every other average Tennessean, and I think that's just wrong. And then, you know, she was spied on as part of Arctic Frost, and I don't condone that at all, and I think that needs to be pursued, and I've called on Attorney General Bondi to do that, and there should be punishment for the misuse of federal power and investigatory power. But that doesn't mean that the senators involved should get, you know, a bonus pay paid for by taxpayers. Punishing taxpayers for the wrongdoing of Biden administration officials is not the right answer, and I think Senator Blackburn and others lost sight of that.
Congressman, before we let you go, Congresswoman Nancy Mace wanting to unleash these secret files, the slush fund, and the reporting is that millions of our tax dollars have been used to pay off victims of sexual abuse on Capitol Hill. You were one of the votes, and again, I think this was a procedural vote. I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but as a result of your vote, that information is not going to be released. Why would you want to protect people on Capitol Hill that may be involved in wrongdoing?
Well, so I think you're right about the framing of the issue here and the vote that we took. I certainly am not opposed to making sure that taxpayers are made aware of payouts that are meant to, you know, keep secret allegations against members of Congress, and certainly would favor that. I think the provision here that we voted on yesterday, and incidentally, as you've already pointed out, overwhelmingly defeated, and a large number of my conservative colleagues who I look to and often am guided by how they assess these issues, join me in voting against this. I think this issue really comes down to whether or not we're going to potentially expose and reveal the identity of the accusers before there's really been a full and fair opportunity to assess the validity of the claims that they've made. And so, you know, Mace was forcing action on a resolution that would have compelled the ethics panel to publicly release all reports and materials on allegations of sexual misconduct and harassment even before there had been an opportunity to vet whether those allegations had credibility. I certainly am not saying that the current process is perfect. I have served on an ethics panel before investigating a member of Congress for wrongdoing, and so there could be significant improvements made, and I think we want as much visibility as we can get. But I do think that this was the wrong way to go about it, and so that's why conservatives like, you know, Jim Jordan and Barry Loudermilk and Mary Miller and Troy Nails and Mark Harris, Mike Collins, you know, several of these people were voting with me because they're very concerned about the chilling effect that it would have on victims if their identities were released when they wanted to remain, you know, they wanted those, you know, the potential for their release to be kept.
Kept
confidential.
Yeah, no, I get it, and we're coming up on a super hard break here, Congressman. And I know we covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate you doing that and taking the hard questions. Real quick, where can people go if they want to get more information about your campaign?
JohnRose.com, JohnRose.com, and appreciate you very much, Todd. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Congressman, always a pleasure. Thank you. Good luck to you out there on the campaign trail. That, ladies and gentlemen, Congressman John Rose, who is also a farmer. He is his family has been in this state for generations, and he's going up against Senator Marsha Blackburn. She's leading with a massive margin in all the polls. And State Representative Monty Fritz, who I think would be certainly generating a lot of attention from the America First crowd. All right, we've got to take a break. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, just got a note from one of our listeners on KWAM. Good afternoon, Todd. This is from Curtis from Memphis. Good afternoon, Todd. Good afternoon, Curtis. I agree with the congressman. Marsha Blackburn will not be getting my vote because she's a do-nothing individual. She hasn't done anything productive since she's been in public office. I will not be voting for her for governor. P.S., I'm the one that met you at the Trump rally at the Landers Center a few years ago. I had on the T-shirt that read, "I left the Democratic plantation in 2016. So good for you, Curtis. Well, it's going to be a heated race, and I will just say this, and this goes for everybody across the country, to you Republicans. Once the primary is done, you can fight like cats and dogs, all right, during the primaries. But once the primaries are over, You got to get behind your nominee. We've got too much at stake here, folks. In the midterms, we've got too much at stake to mess around like that. We just do. All right, cut number one, please.
But most importantly, we're going to hold people accountable for the choices they make. The difference between athletes today and 50 years ago, today everybody wants to talk about their rights and their privileges. 50 years ago, people talked about their obligation and responsibilities. And I'm one of these people that firmly believe you join a spouse, you join a team, you join a business. You have obligations to other people. If you want to fail, you have the right to fail. You do not have the right to cause other people to fail because you don't do everything to the very best of your ability.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the great Lou Holtz, who passed away yesterday. Just had an incredible life, one of the great football coaches of all time, turned things around at Notre Dame, won the national championship, and he's a man that really brought a lot of wisdom to not only the game of football, but also to life. And we need more football coaches like Lou Holtz out there, willing to people that are willing to say what needs to be said. And imagine the lives of the young men that how they were changed under his coaching tutelage. So certainly want to pray for the family of the great Lou Holtz today as they mourn his passing now in glory. All right, hang tight, everybody. Got to take a break. We'll be right back. Dylan, what about Agent Orange? Can we use that? I think that would kill the bugs, but it might take out some of our staff, too.
Yeah, you might want to buy hazmat suits first.
Yeah, I'm just...
If you're really that serious about it, go for it.
I'm really frustrated. I want to get, like, a flamethrower and just, like, torch them. And
we
they
need
fly.
To keep you away from the ideas.
They fly, and someone told me, the lovely Miss Kristen, who puts my face on every day, she said there's some that bite these but they're not ladybugs. They're like dragon ladybugs or something. They're Chinese.
They might bite. They might spit something out. It's like acid or something.
Communist bastards.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
Anyway, if any of you guys have solutions on how we can fix the problem, even Congress, you know, I just realized Congressman Rose, who's a farmer, he never told us how to get rid of them.
No, he did relate to us, though, that there are many.
Just like
a few.
Just like a politician. Good Lord.
It's okay.
I'm going to switch my vote. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Jeez, Lou. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Luke Symbol joining us, our great Republican strategist. And Luke, hope you're doing well today. A lot of political news going on.
Yes, a lot of political news and a lot of political infighting.
So here's my concern, and I've got several, and I know a lot of our listeners are saying, stop being, what do they call them, a panickin. But I'm not a panickin. I'm just looking at the numbers. And when you look at what happened in that special election in Tennessee, which was, what, a 20-plus Trump district. You look at what just happened in Virginia, where the Republicans were slaughtered, completely wiped out. It was like Custer's last stand. When you look at what just happened in Texas and North Carolina with voter turnout, we've got an enthusiasm problem here in the Republican side of the aisle. How do we fix that?
Yeah, we have an enthusiasm problem, and we are now, unfortunately, the party of low propensity voters, which means that we come out every 4 years, but we miss these special elections. We miss these elections that are between the presidential election every 4 years, and we need to wake people up. This is happening to parties across the country. You know, part of it is sometimes local parties are apathetic or they're not doing what they need to do to get the vote out, state and local parties and national parties. This has been a problem with the RNC, and I think the RNC needs to develop a strategy that then gets pushed to the state, that then gets pushed to the county parties to get the vote out. And here's the message, Todd. And Trump, in his State of the Union speech, helped reset the narrative on so much of this, and we can't lose some of that momentum with the narrative. The Democrats are radical. And when you look at Virginia, for example, they try to run on a moderate platform. They get into office and they turn into crazy leftists. They push these policies that are insane. And so we need to wake people up. I want, messages about what happened in Virginia across the country saying you can't trust these people. They lie to you, and the minute they get into office, they turn into radical leftists.
And Spanberger campaigned on this idea that she's a moderate, and of course, we know that's turned out not to be true. When you look at this guy, James Tallarico, mm-hmm. I think he's a very dangerous guy. And I think, though, that he's going to try to portray himself as a moderate. This guy is a raging leftist.
You're right. Look, there are some bad Republicans, but all the Democrats are bad. And that's what they're leftist, Marxist. They want to bring in this DEI stuff, that they are just waiting at the sidelines that the minute the House takes back power, which they're saying they're going to take back power this year, which will happen if Republicans don't get out and vote. The minute they take back power, Trump's agenda is going to be completely derailed, although it's already somewhat being derailed because the Senate still has not passed the SAVE Act.
No, they have not. And you heard Congressman John Rose just a moment ago talking about that. The hubris of John Thune here.
I know.
What is going on? Why is he defying his president?
It almost is to the point where it's like, who has something on him? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. And when you look at Thune, when you look at Tillis, when you look at Cornyn, these so-called Republicans that when you hear them speak, they sound like Democrats. And I just don't understand it. And you have 80% of the country agreeing with what's in the SAVE Act, and you can't get the Senate to pass it. You can't put a voice filibuster out. So to make somebody, make Cory Booker faint because he's speaking for too long and then take a vote and win, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
And now you've got a mess happening there. in the Republican-controlled Senate. You've got a mess over at DHS right now. By the way, Senator John Kennedy coming out, and he's saying that after Kristi Noem's brutal testimony yesterday, that Trump called him and suggested that Noem was not being forthcoming with her answers to some of the questions. That tells me she's on the chopping block.
She's on the chopping block. I think, that tells me also that Stephen Miller, who is really active in what DHS is doing, is really active in the DOJ. I have friends who work for the DOJ who say he's on calls every day with them kind of directing. That tells me he's also fed up too.
Well, and the problem in the DOJ, you had the report coming out yesterday. They're not going to be moving forward on the auto pen. They've shelved the auto pen scandal. What exactly are... And again, it may very well be that all of these scandals, there turns out there's nothing to it. And if that's the case, then we need to have conversations with House Republicans because they've been wasting our money on these big dollar made for TV hearings when in fact there was nothing there.
Well, and sunlight is the best disinfectant. Release the information that you have. And I totally agree with you, Todd. And the country is really focused on this. And we're not going to have a good time in the midterms coming up if we don't change some things. And Trump is doing everything that he can. Like I said, in the State of the Union address, he completely reset the narrative. And unfortunately, the establishment Republicans, a lot of these Republicans in the Senate and in the House, are not following suit. And they need to start taking some notes and learning, because Trump will not be around forever. And the Republican Party was dead before he arrived. And it will go back to being that way if we don't change some things.
Oh, I got to play this. This is Tallarico talking about his whiteness. Cut number four.
For me, prophetic voices like Jesus have helped me reckon with my own whiteness, my own masculinity, my own certainty, my own ego. It's a never-ending process, and it's a painful process.
All right, so James Tallarico is now a woman, ladies and gentlemen.
That's so gross.
It's disgusting. I mean, this guy is weird. He was boasting about being a teenage boy and going to Planned Parenthood protest back in the early 2000s. I think we need to be checking out this guy's computers.
Yeah, if you have any testosterone, you just can't vote Democrat. And if you're a woman who appreciates testosterone in your man, you can't vote Democrat either. Mm.
This guy's a Presbyterian, by the way.
Tallarico.
He says his grandfather was a Southern Baptist pastor in South Texas. I'm fairly certain something clearly went wrong, horribly wrong.
Oh, no.
So I want to play this audio for you. This is CNN's Harry Enten. I love this guy. The guy's got so much energy. And he was pointing out this new polling data they've got. Take a listen.
Two Republican primaries. He is a Tom Brady. He is a Babe Ruth. Because take a look here. Times Trump endorses one GOP primaries, congressional and gubernatorial races, 98% in 2020, 95% in 2022, and then 96% in 2024. Now, I will note that oftentimes he endorses incumbents and those folks don't necessarily have very hard challengers. But even when he endorses challengers against incumbents, the challengers win a majority of the time. His endorsement, President Trump's endorsement, is as good as gold in Republican primaries.
You know, you compare it to Tom Brady. He actually does better than Tom. Tom Brady lost.
He did.
A few Super Bowls, stunningly.
Yeah.
Donald Trump almost never loses when he endorses in a primary. Because why?
Why? Because Republicans love Donald Trump more than any president's own party supporters loved him at this particular point. Just take a look here. Okay, own party supporters, 21st century presidents, own party approval about at this point in the second term. Bush was at 77%. Obama was at 77%. Look at this. 86% of Republicans approve of the job that Donald Trump is doing at this point. That is higher than either Obama or Bush had within their own party at this point. Trump's magic touch has not seemed to wore off yet when it comes to the Republican base.
What do you make of that? Those are huge numbers.
It shows that Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. And if you are a Republican, you have to get on board with the MAGA agenda. It is hugely popular. It addresses the kitchen table issues, affordability, crime that people really care about. Just get on board. And do you think he's going to endorse? I think he's going to endorse in that Texas race.
So we were talking about this earlier, and there is a lot of concern that if, in fact, the president goes with Cornyn, that it is going to enrage the base because they hate They hate John Cornyn. Now, keep in mind, this is a guy who's been in the Senate for well over two decades, and he barely got 42% of the vote in that Republican primary. That tells me that half of the Republican Party hates this guy.
But why do they hate him? It's because he hates us.
That's right.
He hates the MAGA voter. He even said that these MAGA voters are out of touch with normal Republicans. That he's the one that is out of touch. The normal Republican has changed, and we are an American First Party, and Cornyn is not an American First Party. He wants to open the floodgates to legal immigration. He wants to open the floodgate. I mean, has he even addressed the mosques that are popping up all over Houston, Dallas, and Texas? That state is going to go blue.
He has been. He's been issuing these statements celebrating the Islamic faith and their holidays. That's what John Cornyn has been doing.
He's completely out of touch, and he is perfectly fine with Texas going blue. And it's not because of illegal immigration, although that was a problem in Texas, but it is because of legal immigration, and they want to open the floodgates. And now the litmus test for whether you are an American first congressperson or senator is, what do you say about legal immigration? Do we want to protect the American worker? Do we want to protect the American culture, our way of life, assimilate the folks already here, and turn off the mass migration or not? And Cornyn wants to let anybody who wants to come in legally come in, and it's destroying his state.
All right, and guys, we do have some breaking news to share with you.
Breaking news now on the Todd Starn Show.
All right, we're going to get into the particulars, but Kristi Noem now out at the Department of Homeland Security. She's being demoted. This coming from my team over at Newsmax. We're going to look into all of the details, but we were somewhat prophetic, Luke Symbol, talking about the future of Kristi Noem. But yes, she has been fired as the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security. So that information just now coming out, and we'll dig into that. We're gonna take a quick break here, regroup. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Starn Show. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Todd Starns Radio Show. We have breaking news on a couple of fronts. So first of all, we can confirm that, and we announced this in the last segment, Kristi Noem has been fired as Homeland Security Secretary. The president announcing that he is nominating Mark Wayne Mullen to be the next Secretary of Homeland Security. Now, that's going to be interesting because Mullen is a senator, a Republican senator from Oklahoma. So that will leave an opening there. So we'll keep you updated. The president did say that Kristi Noem will be moving on to be, quote, the special envoy for the Shield of the Americas, a new security initiative in the Western Hemisphere that's going to be announced on Saturday. The president thanking Kristi Noem for her service. Luke, no surprise there.
No surprise. And after her testimony, I mean, to have Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana very frustrated with Noem, the writing was on the wall. And as you said in the last segment, the president apparently was not happy with her testimony. She wouldn't answer the question, and you know, and was not forthcoming. And so she's out. And hopefully we can get a lot done with this new guy.
When somebody asks you, are you cheating on your spouse? The correct response, if you didn't do anything, is hell no. Who told you that? I'm going to beat the living crap out of him.
You're exactly right. You have to immediately deny. You can even have a one word answer. You can say no, and I'm not going to deign this with any more of a response. But yeah. But she can't. I mean, I think we know what's happening.
Yeah. She could have even said, well, not today. I mean, at least, you know, I mean,
that may not have been true.
Unbelievable. Now this breaking news from Texas, and this is weird. So the Attorney General Ken Paxton just put out a statement saying that he would consider dropping out of the race if Senate leadership agrees to lift the filibuster and pass the Save America Act. So he thinks he's falling on the sword here. He goes on to say John Cornyn is a coward who has refused to support abolishing the filibuster to pass the bill. All right, so he thinks he's doing the right thing here. President Trump disagrees, because the president just responded. President Trump telling Politico that is a bad thing for Ken Paxton to say. That he, this is the quote, that is bad for him. So maybe that leads me to go to the other direction.
No. Cornyn hates you, President Trump. Be loyal to your base. Paxton has been so loyal to President Trump. He stood by President Trump when with the voter irregularities in 2020.
Sure
he
did.
Defended him profusely. He had good articulate arguments. He has stood. Paxton has been so faithful and loyal to the American first agenda for President Trump. And what Paxton is doing, which is brilliant, what Paxton is doing is forcing the narrative on the SAVE Act. He is forcing the issue. He is forcing Cornyn to respond. And that's where we should be applying pressure right now. Apply it on Cornyn.
You know, I was talking to some folks last night in D.C., and they were actually saying that the rumblings are that Thune was dangling the Save America Act, dangling it out there to get Trump to saying, Mr. Trump, Mr. President, if you endorse Cornyn, we'll move forward with the filibuster.
Interesting. I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
I would not believe anything. Seriously, you got to do it first, and then I'll think about it.
Yeah, that's my concern. Even with Paxton's statement, you can get promises all day long, but until they actually move the SAVE Act in the Senate, I just don't know that anything's going to happen. This is such a debacle, and we're focusing on the SAVE Act when it is clear how popular it is, and we could be passing it and focusing on things like affordability, focusing on things like crime, focusing on the message that Trump had in the State of the Union address that was so popular with the American people, getting independence back on board. But instead, we're just in limbo, and the Senate doesn't seem to be doing anything.
All right. Oh, I do want to. I'm thinking of, you know, the Constitution of the Constitution of States. What are they called? The Convention of States.
Yes, Convention of States.
I'm thinking about doing something.
What?
A mandatory. This is mandatory rule for all political parties that campaign dinners can be no longer than 90 minutes. What do you think? I think you'll get some support.
You and I were at one recently that was a little longer.
Yeah, we're still analyzing what was on that dinner plate.
Poor Todd. Actually, Todd and I had the pleasure of sitting next to each other.
That's
and
right.
Poor Todd and I were cutting through the rubber chicken.
Was that what that was? Yeah,
I think it was chicken. He did not like his kale salad, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. It was kale. I thought it was arugula.
With green onions, yeah.
I'm looking at the menu. It had kale salad, gluten-free dessert, and some vegetarian option involving a giant mushroom. I'm like, I thought it was at the Democrat Party dinner.
I'm like, it was a thing. Yeah.
We eat steak on the Republican side. All right, Luke Semple, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, wow, what a lot of breaking news. And you picked the right place because we're all over the stories. Hang tight, hour three of the big show coming up next.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes. Oh,
yeah. All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to hour three of the big show. We've survived. We have made it in spite of the attack of the ladybugs. Some major breaking news in the last hour of the show. Let me recap for you, because there are a lot of moving parts, but we can tell you that Kristi Noem is out at Homeland Security after that disastrous testimony yesterday, where she was grilled by Republicans and Democrats. So Kristi Noem is being moved to another position. Mark Wayne Mullen, who is the senator from Oklahoma, is the president's pick to be the new Secretary of Homeland Security. So a lot of moving parts there. Also, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, announcing on his social media page just a little while ago that if the Senate passes the SAVE Act, then he will pull out of the race. which is a noble gesture, but President Trump did not like that gesture, and the president said he's so irritated that he may end up endorsing John Cornyn, who, by the way, Cornyn hates Trump. So a lot of weird news breaking loose. My question, ladies and gentlemen, who do you support in Texas? Do you support Kim Paxton or do you support John Cornyn? We're going to be taking your calls on that, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Well, I'm excited to have a great guest, and I'm a big history buff, and I don't know about you, but I love American history. And whenever there's a documentary on, whenever there's sort of like a Netflix biography about a president, I can't get enough of that. And I know with the 250th anniversary of the country, a lot of folks are looking for ways to reconnect with American history. Many people are looking for ways to teach their kids about American history. And we're honored to have with us Donald Harrison, who is the chairman of the Mid-South Military History and Civil War Show. This is the South, and I mean, when you're talking about the South, the entire South, this is the oldest military history show in the region, and it's returning to the Landers Center this coming weekend in South Haven, Mississippi. All of you folks listening to us in Memphis, you know where South Haven is, this coming Friday and Saturday. And Mr. Harrison, or Dr. Harrison, what an honor to have you with us. And I have to imagine, first of all, I'm shocked you're in studio, because I have to imagine you should be setting something up right now.
Well, it's a busy time, but I thank you for having me here, and it's great to be here to be able to talk about the Mid-South Military History and the Civil War Show.
You know, I love these kinds of things, and I don't know if you, I was watching a Netflix documentary a couple of weeks, or it's a movie about the life of James Garfield, it's sort of like a mini-series. Mm-hmm. And one of our great presidents, and of course he was assassinated, and you really, mm-hmm. a lot of kids don't know the history of James Garfield. But again, when you go to these kinds of shows, I guess you sort of get glimpses of maybe parts of American history that you didn't know about.
Oh, absolutely. We like to call our event, it's a once a year event, a traveling history of history museum of American history. You know, we have, books there. We have 10 authors who collectively have written about 150 books on
wow.
American history, world history, and some historical fiction. There are dug relics that has been found, shells, and we're covering, Native American artifacts. We cover the time period from the colonial America through the 20th century. And, you know, you can see uniforms worn during the American Revolution, Civil War, Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II. So we cover a lot. We cover, it's a good place to come and actually see American history right in front of you from what the vendors have. And our items are that the vendors have are for sale. Some are just for exhibit to look at. And if you have, just today I got a phone call from a gentleman who said that he recently has some old rifles with bayonets back during the Civil War, and he would like to find out the value of it. So we have plenty of experts there that can give him an estimate on what he has and how much, and if he wants to sell, he can do that.
It's going to be so much fun. And again, folks, Mid-South Military History and Civil War Show. It is the South's oldest military history show at the Landers Center. And of course, it all starts tomorrow, 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock, and then all day Saturday. And you're just 15 minutes from downtown Memphis, but if you're in the area, I have to imagine it's a lot of fun to see maybe dads bringing their kids with them and exposing their kids to our history.
Well, you know, that's one of our goals, is trying to educate and to reach out, you know, to the young people. Because, what we hear, the educational system of what history is being taught, it's lacking in many cases. One thing we have done with some success is have an essay contest that and we're going to, of course, that has gone past, and we will recognize the three winners of our essay contest in American history on Saturday morning.
And so you're going to have, is this true? So you're going to have relics. People will be able to see all of this for themselves, going from the Revolutionary War all the way to Vietnam era.
Yes, that is correct. There's also going to be photographs, you know, from the 19th century, Civil War soldiers, civilians, other time periods, paper documents. For example, one paper document with a local connection to the Memphis area is during the Civil War, there was a family, the Miller family of Marshall County, Mississippi. They had cotton confiscated by the Confederate Army. And the general, it was General Villepigue, I think that's actually his pronunciation, he signed the letter stating that so much, you know, cotton was taken from them, and that's their receipt for some sort of compensation. So if you have a happen to be a descendant of the Miller family from that part of Mississippi, that might be your family.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And by the way, kids under 12, you get in free.
Yes.
And it's a very affordable prices here. $10 for adults and a two-day pass, $15?
That's correct. Two-day pass for $15 or, you know, $10. You purchase all the tickets at the door, you know, and it'll be a great time. We have a speaker series on Saturday morning from 11 a.m. through 4 p.m., and we have five historians that are going to talk about on various topics.
And let me get this straight. So also, you guys are doing a huge ceremony on Saturday, and people,
yes,
are going to be dressed. Is this true? They're going to be dressed in period uniforms.
Well, you know, our show is open Friday 1 to 6 p.m., but actually we have the opening ceremony on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. It's just easier to get people to show up at 10 a.m. or, you know, for the color guards. We have a 20-minute ceremony with this opening. It starts off with bagpipers, the Memphis Phoenix Pipe Band, followed by color guards dressed in the American uniform from the Revolution, the Civil War reenactors following World War II reenactors, and it's about 15 or 20 minutes, but it's very patriotic. Everybody enjoys, you know, this ceremony. It's just a nice little break.
One of the other things I know, Dr. Harrison, that you guys are going to have, a famous artist from the Memphis area, Raymond Waddy,
yes,
who is one of the few aviation artists in the world, and he's going to have there'll be a number of his paintings of vintage aircraft that people will be able to purchase as well.
That is correct. You know, he most of his artwork is of World War II airplanes, but some World War I and some ships too. But it's unique. The artists, there just aren't many aviation artists in the world.
No, they're not. They're not. We've got to get to this though, because there's a lot happening, of course, and a lot of attention being focused on the war in Iran right now. And one of the big stories, for the first time since World War II, we had a U.S. submarine torpedo an Iranian warship. Just by, you know, providence, you guys are going to be showing a movie about the very first submarine to sink an enemy ship during warfare.
Yes, that's correct. That will be tomorrow, Friday at 3 p.m. We're showing the movie The Hunley, which is a submarine in 1864 in Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, that sank the USS Housatonic, and that is the first time that a submarine sank an enemy ship in the world. So it's a fascinating movie. I'm sure many of you know the story about the Hunley. Donald Sutherland is prominent role in the movie. The movie lasts about an hour and a half, so it's a very good movie, worthwhile seeing.
And you'll be able to buy some popcorn too to watch.
We'll
that
have
movie,
popcorn. So. There's no extra charge for that.
$10
gets you in to see everything the vendors have, to see the movie, and you'll get to talk with a lot of people interested in history and things of that sort.
So, all right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but it's going to be so much fun. This is the Mid-South Military History and Civil War Show. What a great way, folks, to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Bring your kids. It's a family-friendly event. It all starts tomorrow and then Saturday. So if you can't come Friday, you can come Saturday.
9 to 5 Saturday.
All right, good stuff. There'll be plenty of food there, a lot of stuff for you to check out, and some really just incredible things. Again, if you want to buy, sell, or trade, you can do all three.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Harrison, thank you so much for dropping by, and what a great thing you guys are doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on here.
All right. There you go, folks. The Mid-South Military History and Civil War Show. This is the South's oldest military history show at the Landers Center in South Haven, Mississippi. That is tomorrow and Saturday. If you're looking for a fun way and a very clever way to celebrate our nation's great birthday, got to take a break. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Christy Noem is out. Mark Wayne Mullins is expected to be the new Homeland Security Secretary. What a crazy time it is. And look, there's just a lot of upheaval right now within a Trump world. And that, you know, again, it'll all get sorted out. But keep in mind, the American people still support President Trump overwhelmingly. I think one of the big challenges has been that a lot of folks, when they are named to a cabinet position, they seem to forget their place in the great scheme of things. Everybody tries to be the next Donald Trump. We've already got a Donald Trump. We need you, cabinet secretaries, to do the job that you were hired to do. So just something to keep in mind. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. Big Social Security update to share with you. 70 million Americans collect Social Security benefits today. A new study finds 70% of Americans do not get the full benefits they deserve. There is a simple strategy to boost Social Security benefits by as much as $188,000 over a lifetime. Social Security expert Michael Allen says it's true, and he has five key strategies to increase your benefits, all in a free special report courtesy of Newsmax. Newsmax says the report is your best guide for bigger Social Security benefits. So if you're looking for a bigger check from Social Security, well, you're going to want to get this free strategy here. Whether you're getting the benefits or you soon will be, you need to read the report. Again, get it free. All you have to do is call 800-999-9690. Again, it's a free offer here, folks. 800-999-9690. We will text you right away with President Trump's act cutting your Social Security taxes. Again, that number, 800-999-9690. All right. Wow. What a crazy day. It was shaping up to be a nice, I don't know, leisurely day around here. And then it's a breaking news palooza here on the radio program. But we're going to get through it. We're going to get through it. I want to play some audio for you. This is from a young lady. She's very upset, and she went on the TikTok. As most young people are prone. Dylan, are you a TikToker?
I'm not a TikToker, but I am on TikTok.
Oh, you are. So do you watch the videos? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you get caught doom scrolling if you're not careful.
Oh, is that what it is? So it's called doom scrolling on TikTok as well.
Yeah. It's like you are never ending scrolling and it's like 2 a.m. and you're like, oh, wow. Okay.
I see. Yep. Well, this young lady went on the TikTok, and she is very, very upset about all of you folks who think Gen Zers are lazy. Take a listen.
I cannot stand how the news has been dogging Gen Z and calling them lazy for not wanting to work a 9-to-5 for the rest of their lives. Let me put it in perspective for everybody who's a little confused here, okay? I work 5 days out of the week, 40 hours a week, okay? I do not make enough to live on my own. I would not make enough to pay rent, water, electric, and eat. All by myself. I would not be capable of doing that. 20 years ago, when you were getting started, you could live on your own. 20 years ago, when you first started, you were able to do everything that I am now struggling to do. We had another perspective here. You've been working for 20 years. You have 20 years of working experience behind your belt. You have 20 years of experience in a career that has allowed you to gain raises, to get more money, to profit you in an economy that you created. You can sit here and you can call Gen Z lazy all you want, but I've been working my tail end off just to barely make it by. And respectfully, I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. I don't want to work my tail end off, wasting all of my life working just to barely be able to pay my bills. And that is what you created, not Gen Z. We're just here getting started. You've been doing it for the last 20 years. You tell me how it got ruined. We can sit here and we can call Gen Z lazy all you want, but you let the economy turn into what it did. You let it all run to hell. And now it's Gen Z's fault because we don't want to work to fix your mistakes.
You know, I don't want to be critical of someone who's posting videos and clearly going to a lot of work, but you gotta worry about those. Watch those audio levels, right? You don't want the music to overwhelm. It was sort of hard to hear. And Dylan, I started listening to the music, and I really wasn't paying attention to what she was whining and complaining about.
Yeah, I don't understand why people keep doing that. They add the loudest music to their videos.
So
she's so angry.
She's very angry. And look, I mean, she's concerned because she's working 5 days a week. She's working 40 hours a week. And she says she has no money to live on her own. My question would be, what kind of job do you have? You know, it's a lot of you went out there and you got these big college degrees and you're having to pay back the student loans and all that kind of whatnot. So I'm just curious, first of all, what she's making, and second of all, is that a brand new iPhone you were recording on, ma'am? Perhaps a landline might be more affordable. Did you have avocado toast today, or did you drink one of those grandes or ventes at Starbucks? How about some Folgers, ma'am? Gotta take a break. We'll be right back. Oh, boy. This is not good. So we just found out, we just told you that Kristi Noem got fired. Can you guys do me a favor? Just don't tell Kristi Noem just yet. She doesn't know. Turns out she was on stage in Nashville giving a speech when President Trump put out the announcement that don't tell her. Just smile. Give her a hug. Praying for you, Kristi. Just you go, girl. Hope things work out with you and Corey. Wow.
What was Trump saying about creating jobs?
Yeah. Well, we've got an opening. Welcome to our program, our good friends at Strategic Financial Partners, Anna Martin and Chris Loftus. By the way, the website, strategicfinancialpartners.com. Guys, come on. You guys come on every week, and we hang out and have a good conversation. I don't know if you heard the TikTok video we just played.
Uh-uh.
All right. Can we play just a smidge of that? This is a Gen Zer.
Oh, no.
And she's really upset at all of us.
Stand how the news has been dogging Gen Z and calling them lazy for not wanting to work a 9-to-5 for the rest of their lives. Let me put it in perspective for everybody who's a little confused here, okay? I work 5 days out of the week, 40 hours a week, okay? I do not make enough to live on my own. I would not make enough to pay rent, water, electric, and eat. All by myself. I would not be capable of doing that. 20 years ago.
There we go. So,
man.
Do you guys get a lot of that ever? Do you hear from people in that age
Adam?
Group?
Well, here's what I like to say. We can't save everybody.
Oh, jeez.
Also, I was going to be sarcastic and say I actually work 8 to 6, but that would be hitting the wrong
track. Wow. Yeah,
but, that's depends on the day. Well, you know, I think in some part it is valid because you have a lot of older generations who are talking about what it was like when in their day, right? And not from a perspective of the good old days, but saying, oh, well, you know, the value of the dollar used to be able to buy this, this, and this. Well, that's just not the same as it was back in 1985. So that does have an impact on my generation because we see that. We're like, okay, where's that supposed to be for us?
Mm-hmm. So, well, we weren't buying a $5 cup of coffee either or eating avocado toast.
I mean, I think at some point just have a, you know, self-reflection. Look at yourself in the mirror and say, what am I doing that isn't working, and what do I need to do to pivot?
And if that mirror is in a brand new Tesla, that might be a clue.
That would be a strong indicator.
Just want to say, or if you're recording on a brand new iPhone. By the way, I've been getting so much grief over the past 2 weeks. I'm apparently the only person that still has the old iPhone. I haven't upgraded yet.
Mine's pretty old. I think this is a 14.
I think that's what mine is. All right, I don't feel as bad now.
Well, how do you keep making money? You don't spend it on frivolous things.
Exactly.
There's a gentleman in our firm who still has his flip phone. He was showing it off at our annual conference last week, and I'm gonna say I'm kind of jealous just the simplicity of it. So,
you know, it's funny. A lot of people say we're one of the few national shows. We actually gave up our 800 number, and because I realized everybody's calling in on a smartphone, and they don't have to pay the long distance, right? So it was costing us, I think, $500 or $600 a month to have a toll-free line. Oh my gosh. So we just said, why don't we just use the one we've already got and save, you know, $500-$600? So
there you go.
To your point.
Yeah.
Guys, today we're doing a study on insurance. And by the way, if you have questions for the fellas, they're happy to answer your questions. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. So you guys have concocted a hypothetical scenario here.
Absolutely. So we want to make sure that people kind of get an idea of the types of people that we help and the types of situations we encounter in the day-to-day at our firm. And so we've taken a couple of different examples that we've seen and kind of taken some common denominators. And today we want to talk about, let's call it a 24-year-old male who was introduced to his parents' financial advisor, which is something we see quite often, right? You using who your parents use. And again, this is for educational purposes only. It's a hypothetical scenario. But so let's say that advisor specializes primarily in retirement income. Or in retirement income planning, so typically working with individuals in their pre-retirement or retirement years. And this 24-year-old male, this client, gets in touch with him because, you know, it's who his parents used. Well, in this hypothetical example, so the advisor recommends the exact same insurance product to this 24-year-old that had previously been recommended to his parents who are in their mid-50s. And already, Todd, we're seeing some issues there, like, okay, well, what are the ins and outs of this product? And I'll let Adam explain that here in a second. So this product is relatively costly, long-term in structure, and would not really provide meaningful benefit for many years. While it would include a death benefit, which the young man says he would want directed to his parents, although they are not financially dependent on him, he wants ultimately to have an efficient method of growth. And this might not exactly present that with him with that option.
You know, in this hypothetical scenario, the things that stand out to me is that there's two different stages of life here. We've got some that are approaching retirement or near-term retirement, and the other one's got a long runway ahead of them where we would typically see that being a growth-oriented client. You know, somebody who is more concerned with compounding interest over the long term. Obviously, there is a need for some death benefit if they want to start a family or they're going to take on some debt. And, you know, one of the things that we would do is sit down and say, what's most important to you? And in this hypothetical, the advisor uses it as a blanket to say, hey, I service your parents. We're going to give you the same thing. So it was a one-size-fits-all scenario where we don't necessarily think that that's the right path. We think we should be asking these qualified questions. We should be saying, hey, if I can get you an insurance that is very, very cheap, term insurance that covers your bases for while you're in your working years, but we can use the money that you would be spending on this product that your parents have and put that in the market. You know, let's grow that at a competitive rate, and then let's continue having our meetings on an annual basis and say, hey, what's changed? You know, your situation is never static. It's fluid. It's going to change. So we want to make sure as you change, we're changing with you.
And Todd, I'm glad that you showed that TikTok earlier because it kind of goes into this exact scenario. It's the comparison element, right? In this scenario, we see, you know, applying the same strategy or the same viewpoint of, you know, the situations of your parents or an older individual, it raises questions about alignment. Like, okay, well, they had different goals back then. They had different scenarios and situations to what you're encountering on the day-to-day. And so financial recommendations should really reflect time horizon, cash flow needs, risk tolerance, and really just any stated objectives or goals.
We've got Adam Martin and Chris Loftus with us from Strategic Financial Partners. They come in once a week and answer your questions about finances and insurance. StrategicFinancialPartners.com is the website. That's StrategicFinancialPartners.com. So, again, it just seems like what's good for mom and dad may not necessarily be what's good for the 24-year-old or the 25-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to go back to that TikTok and basically, I want to challenge young listeners to be creative. Think for yourself. Think about what the next 40, 50 years looks like for you. And I know that's hard because we can't even really understand what this weekend's looking like. But when you think about what do you want to have freedom-wise, what do you want to make sure that you can sleep soundly at night, how do we do that? Well, it starts with a conversation. That's what we're here to do. We want to sit down and say, what else? What else? What else? What's important to you? What else? And then by the time we get done gathering data and facts, we're going to be able to open up the universe of different products, whether it's insurance, whether it's investing, you know. We'll be able to accurately put a plan together. And as cliche as it sounds, it's a treasure map. You know, X marks the spot. You're going to have some peaks and valleys. You're going to have some collapsing bridges. There's going to be some uh-oh moments, what we always have to pivot on. But you will know for certain that you'll be able to accomplish your financial goals by working with a financial advisor.
And, you know, Todd, something I want to add to that. Again, Adam was talking about the beginning of our process of what that looks like when somebody comes and calls us, specifically with situations and scenarios like this. We start all the same way. We sit down with them, and we conduct a full fact-finding session. And again, it's complimentary. It takes about 15, 20 minutes, and we just get some basic numbers. So that's, you know, income, you know, employment stability. We talk about their monthly expenses, their existing savings, any debt obligations or emergency reserves they might have. And then we perform a needs-based analysis and a formal risk assessment. And this allows us to determine, you know, whether insurance is necessary or not, how much coverage is appropriate, and then what type of coverage best aligns with those goals. And then, of course, we identify the short term, the immediate term, and the long-term priorities, whether that's, you know, maximize efficient growth. Adam obviously will talk about time in the market or versus time out of the market. But then, you know, importantly, this process is educational because it empowers the client to make informed decisions about their personal plan, not what everybody else is doing.
All right. But before we get out of here, guys, I think it's important for us to give a good financial principle for our listeners to think about this week. Adam, I'll let you start.
So one of the best principles that I can just stress is that what gets measured gets done. You know, don't throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. You know, measure it. If you've got a budget, monitor it. You know, if things change, well, how did that affect my cash flow? Or if I'm not getting the rate of return in my portfolio to meet the goals that I want, what am I doing to make sure that I'm pivoting? So always be cognizant of where you're at, what's changed, and then make sure you're making those necessary changes.
I'll keep it short and sweet, Todd. Strategies should evolve as your life evolves. You know, it's that simple. It should, you know, your strategies should not remain static or mirror someone else's situation. They should be tailored directly and exactly to you.
All right, gentlemen, always good seeing you, and thanks for going along with the breaking news coverage here. Again, strategicfinancialpartners.com is the website, strategicfinancialpartners.com, and you'll be able to reach Adam and Chris over on the website. Guys, good to see you.
Good to see you, yes, sir.
All right, got to take a quick break here, folks, and we're taking your calls as well, reacting to the breaking news. Christy Noem is out at Homeland Security. Mark Wayne Mullen, nominated by the president, the senator from Oklahoma. Our number, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, let's go right to the phone lines. 901-260-5926. Gary in Daytona Beach, Florida. Gary, what's on your mind?
Well, even bronchitis isn't going to stop me from calling and giving you a couple points, Todd. I appreciate taking the call. As far as Christy Noem, she kind of got ahead of herself, got to be a little bit narcissistic, and she just, I think she's a capable person, but she, you know, she got fell in the thing that all publicity is good publicity, and it got kind of rough. That was my my one comment about Christine Holmes, the one I really wanted to talk about just for a second was, I thought after I heard Hakeem Jeffries say that despicable thing that we're going to lose, the military will not win. On one of the morning Joes, they had a gentleman named Jonathan Lemire who, with a smile on his face, said, and this is a quote, "As the casualties rise and the war goes on, I think this is the opportunity for the Democrats to tie this around the Republicans in the midterms and possibly 2028. And I thought that was about the grossest thing I heard, with a smirk on his face, talking about as the casualties rise and the war goes on.
Yeah, look, there's going to be a lot of ugliness, Gary, coming from the Democrats. Not terribly surprised at their behavior. You know, the thing about Kristi Noem, I think you're right. She got too big for her britches, as we say in the southern states. And the first time she showed up, wearing, you know, she was all glamorized with makeup and nails and hair, and I think she was going on one of those big ICE raids. I thought, oh boy, this is not going to end well. And unfortunately, it did not end well for her. And I hate that for her. But that's the reality of it. Had she just done her job, but you're right, she did not. She did not do her job. You know, there were a lot of major missteps along the way. One of the other challenges there is the fact that she was spending, what, $220 million on an advertising campaign, and the administration, that's when President Trump stepped in and said, okay, this is out of control. I mean, so she basically is getting what she deserved, unfortunately. So my only concern now is, if, you know, she's going to go back to that farm, and I just pray to the good Lord there aren't any goats or dogs around.
Take care.
Just saying. Thanks. All right, Gary. Hope you get to feeling better. You know what I'm talking about, Dylan.
You're terrible.
I know it's true, though.
I know it's true, but that's just, you know.
I'm a friend of the farm animals. I just want the best for
you
them.
You look out for them.
Oh, you guys have to hear this. This is Minnesota State Representative Athena Hollins. She's a Democrat.
I'm coming at this from my heart and not from my brain.
You know, that is the official that's the official policy of the Democrat Party. It's all coming from the heart and not from the brain. You got to love it. Unbelievable. All right, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. I want to get in this audio from Pat Fallon, who was really laying out Governor Tim Walz and explaining what's really going on with Minnesota's Somali population. Cut 11.
Governor Walz, do you believe the 70,000-strong Somali community as a whole has made a positive impact on your state?
I do.
So you'd be the opinion, fair to say, that the Somali community has successfully assimilated and is making Minnesota better?
Yeah, I believe they're on that path, okay. Yes.
I'm just curious by what metric you'd come to that conclusion. I just looked at some hard data. And do you have any idea what percentage of the native-born Minnesotans, all races, live in poverty in your state right now?
I don't have specifically.
I'll share it with you. It's 8%. For the Somali community, it's 52%. How about receiving food stamps? I'll run it down with you. It's 7%, and then compared to 54% in the Somali community. And then don't have at least a high school diploma for all Minnesotans. It's 5%. Somali community, it's 39%. One family member at least on Medicaid, it's 18% for Minnesota, 73% for the Somali community. And receiving welfare of some form, it's 21%. And it's 81% for the Somali community. Governor, do you happen to know what the percentage is of all those who have currently been charged in this staggering social services fraud scheme were native-born Minnesotans? What percentage?
I do not have that.
I think it was 85 out of 98, which comes out to 13% Minnesotan and 87% Somali Minnesotan. So I think this is an instance, perhaps, of where woke gets slapped by data. Governor, there's been billions stolen over 7+ years right under your nose, and really there's only two explanations. It's either you were in on it or you weren't smart enough to see it. It's either criminal negligence or wild incompetence. And the only way this kind of fraud can reach this scale is if there's people in power that are colluding and collaborating and willfully blinding themselves to the realities around them. And in oversight, when we do investigations, it's rare for us to have whistleblowers because they face retribution and punishment and resentment, and they can be ostracized, and it's difficult and it's uncomfortable, and sometimes it's even dangerous. So when we have having an investigation and we have even a couple of whistleblowers, it's very valuable to us because they provide invaluable insight. Do you have any idea how many whistleblowers are working from Minnesota or working with the Oversight Committee?
I do not. We have our own strong protections in the OLA, the independent.
Well, and it's 30. I mean, I haven't seen that in 5-plus years in Congress, 30.
And they still couldn't figure it out. Go figure. We'll have more to say about that on tomorrow's show. By the way, tomorrow is Open Line Friday on the Todd Stern Show, which means you get to call in, talk about whatever is on your mind. Tonight, double duty on Newsmax, the Todd Stern Show, 5 o'clock Eastern. Then I'll be filling in for Greg Kelly. That will be 8 o'clock Eastern. So be sure to hang out with us. You'll enjoy the programs tonight, the very latest on what's happening in the administration. Get out there and be good, everybody.